Welcome to the Interviews Podcast.
Welcome, Interisti, to episode 119 of the Interviews Podcast. We're here for the post-match reaction of Inter-Bologna at the San Siro, which finished 2-2. Goals from Santiago Castro in the 15th, Denzel Dumfries in the 19th, Lautaro Martinez in the 41st, actually no, in the 45th, and Emil Holm in the 64th minute. As always, I am one half of your co-hosting duo, Alessandro Raffa, joined here by Johnny Paterno, the official podcast of SempreInter.com. I don't know if I said that. We're more than 24 hours removed from this game, which we don't typically do as far as the recording is concerned. So it feels a little bit different the day after, than recording in the moment. I think I have a lot to say as far as some of the critiques Ooh. That are being thrown Inter's way. I prepared some screen shares here that we're going to go ahead and get into.
Oh, dang.
I just have some things that I want to touch on. More of a, we'll obviously talk about the match a little bit. And I really want to have a state of the union about Inter because, you know, we're halfway through the season now. We're, you know, pretty deep into these competitions that we're competing for. And it's the January transfer window. So, you know, we have an opportunity to really assess where the squad is at. Some of the criticism has been very fair. And some of it, I think, has been a little bit overblown. And I definitely want to get into it. I'm sure people are going to disagree and, you know, whatever it is. But I think it's worth the discussion. So, how you doing, man? How you feel?
You know, just I feel like I haven't been able to enjoy watching Inter as much lately only because of how stressful work has been. You know, a lot of things going on, a lot of big changes, big things breaking. And when you're in an office with a bunch of Serie A fans, you know, a lot of banter goes back and forth. And it's yeah, it's just been it's hectic, and I kind of wish that Inter would alleviate some of that that hecticness, but hasn't been the case as of late.
They've given the people who are constantly at Inter's throats, whether it's fans or whether it's people in the media, everybody loves to take their jabs at Inter, whether it's warranted. I don't know that all of the criticism is, and We'll get into it. So, story of the game. I mean, we played really well at times. There were several actions in the first half that didn't result in goals, but it was, you know, we were cutting through them like a hot knife through butter. The second goal, you know, Lautaro's goal was beautiful. The whole buildup was pretty spectacular. And Bologna scored off of, ultimately, two deflected goals, right? One coming off of, who was it? It off of Castro. It was shot in, and Devry was on him. It just diverted it past Sommer. Sommer went the wrong way, but he was going the right way based off of the shot from Moro. And then the second goal, Holm, you know, strikes it. And if it came off Bastoni a little harder, it would have went wide of the post. And that's how we, you know, we had those goals submitted. So we lost control of the game in the second half. And I think there's a very specific reason for that. But what's your main takeaway from the 90 minutes that we played at home against Bologna yesterday?
Yeah, for me, it was two lucky goals. That's the way I look at it. Like, two accidents. It could have been us that got those two lucky goals, you know, and then would they have scored two goals? Because really, outside of the shot that hit the crossbar in the first half for them, I mean, they really didn't do anything too threatening on Jan Sommer. So I think we as fans are definitely spoiled. I think we forget that we're never going to go 38-0-0 there's going to be games like this. And that's what I took away from it. Like, it's two deflected goals. Do I think, yeah, I agree with you that we lost control of it in the second half. And that's disappointing. You know, and maybe, you know, you could make arguments for Inzaghi took too long to make substitutions and stuff like that. And I would agree. But at the same time, I'm also like, it's two deflected goals. That's the only reason they equalized. They didn't equalize because of, you know, fantastic play or you know, wonder strikes on net. They just sometimes just the way the ball bounces. And, you know, I mean, you could even look at Dumfries' goal, right? Skorupski makes a save on the first attempt from DiMarco. What if that ball went, he deflected it more central and not towards DiMarco? I mean, towards Dumfries. Do we get that goal back? You know, like, it's a game of bounces, inches, however you want to look at it. We take the point, and even though our direct opponents also drop points and we weren't able to capitalize, we're still in the race. The title race isn't over. Like, let's just relax a little.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more, and I'm gonna break down exactly why. But before we get into that, do you want to dive right into the Q&A about this game, and then we can do sort of a state of the union about the club?
Let's do that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's get into your questions here. So first, why doesn't Barella play in the regista role and drop Aslani and give Fratesi in the role? I would have liked to actually see that combination. Of the options outside of Hakan, I think Barella is probably the best regista, but Fratesi apparently is not physically ready for that. Not physically ready for more than, I guess, a 20-minute cameo at this point in time. And then Zielinski, we know, you know, his defensive abilities are not too much, not too better than, I don't even know, that's not even a phrase. They're not much better than what Aslani offers. So what do you think about that?
For the many things I don't like about Aslani, I think if you put Barella in the regista role, even though he is right now really probably the best option after Hakan, you're also taking away some of his strengths and, you know, his ability to pass and break the lines, find pockets of space in the attacking third. That goes away with Fratesi instantly. Fratesi doesn't have vision. Fratesi doesn't have the passing range. Fratesi doesn't have the all-around game that Barella brings in that role. So it's like, either way, we're losing something. We put Aslani in, he's a mess defensively. You put Fratesi in, he doesn't do what Barella is able to do. So it's like, what are you willing to give up? That's really what I look at it.
The midfield becomes extremely unbalanced. Extremely unbalanced with Fratesi in it. But you can say the same thing for Aslani. And at this point, it's like Inzaghi has to make selections with what he has available. Mkhitaryan, you know, wasn't able to give anything. So, you're dealing with some cards. But I could see a world where Barella would have been the better choice. But we'll get into that. Jack Hakan, can Aslani redeem himself and become a more frequent presence for Inter in this team? I feel like we're talking way too much about Aslani. But if that wasn't the game that, and Sharma tweeted it, like if that's not the game where Interisti finally see that he's not up to snuff, then I don't know what you're watching.
100% agree. Like, the man's just a liability. Sharma said, you know, that might have been the final nail in the coffin. The nail was in the coffin a couple of weeks ago. This is just they lowered the casket 6 feet. You know, so he's done with to me. I don't think there's anything he can do to redeem himself, in my opinion. But we'll see.
Yeah, I would have to agree, and I know that he said he's a regista. In his press conference that he gave, I forget after which game it was, but after the Venezia game, but not for me. He's not strong enough back there. He also made some bad decisions in that game. It was like dribbling into traffic right in front of your, you know, right in front of your goal it's amateur stuff. It's not professional footballer kind of stuff. And his level is definitely closer to Bologna than it is to Inter, even though they took a couple points off us. At Legenstudenser, I don't know how to pronounce that. Who would you rather send on a one-way trip to Mars, Aslani or Patrick Hendrick?
Ooh.
Let me rephrase that. Would you rather watch Aslani start the next game or have Patrick Hendrick commentate on that game?
I think the answer still would be the same for me. I would rather send Aslani to Mars, even if there is no transfer fee involved. And I would rather listen to Patrick Hendrick than listen to or have to watch Christian Aslani struggle in the midfield again.
Yeah. What did you think of his commentary, by the way?
He is... It's... I understand he's a part of the world feed. So really, like, when the match gets sent and it's spoken in English, you're going to listen to Patrick Hendrick, whether you're in Sweden, Argentina, you know, the US, Canada, whatever. If the world feed, if he's speaking the English speaker comment, English speaking commentator for the world feed, you're stuck, unfortunately. He's just the bias is so disgusting. Like, I kind of wish, you know how CBS has every game that they cover, they have their own anchors for every game. I wish that Paramount was in a position where for Serie A, you had two set for every Serie A game that's going to be televised. And it doesn't have to be from the world feed. It doesn't have to be, you know, Patrick Hendrick or anyone else. It could just be, you know, English speakers. Like, how nice would it be having, you know, Vieri, let's say, and whatever color commentator or head, you know, commentator, whatever, on it, you know, to cover the games, as opposed to hearing Patrick Hendrick with his usual anti-Inter bias and agenda. And yeah,
I don't think he's a bad commentator. I just hate listening to him when he's on Inter games, because there's always, like, the thing with the commentators, they can always push back and say, of course we're not biased, how could you question my integrity? But, like, it's very, there's little things that you pick up on. That's, I mean, first of all, you know, he loves Napoli. He gushes over
Napoli.
He loves Southern Italy. Like, I get he's into that. He posts like a 7-minute, you know, ode to Cavada, like, who, you know, I mean,
like, I'm happy for you that you found your wife in Naples. Congrats. But, like, I don't know. It doesn't mean that you automatically.
There's little things like him talking about, you know, an Inter player got shoved and made a meal of it. And he's like, no, that's never a foul, but you never see it go the other way if the same thing happens with the other team. And, you know, talking how defensively fragile Inter is. And, like, we'll definitely talk about that later on in the episode. But I just don't enjoy listening to him talk about Inter, because it just doesn't seem like we've been one of the most elite clubs in Europe over the last several seasons. And we don't get the respect in his commentary. So whatever. Don't care. Atalanta have picked up, this is from Nico. Atalanta have picked up 3 out of 9 points in the last 3 matches. Do you still believe they will keep this a 3-way title race? What do you think?
I think so. I think they're good enough, and they're looking to make, you know, some additions in January. I don't know if they're actually going to happen, but they're looking to improve the squad to continue to be able to compete in it. So, I hope so. At least for the league. I'm not because I want them to beat Inter or something, but I think it's good when you have, you know, these typical team or not typical teams being able to compete in the title race.
Yeah, I think they've showed their quality throughout the year. Every team is going to come up against adversity, and they've run into some issues recently. But I think, you know, they can put it on a lot of teams in Serie A, and I don't know if they'll be able to keep it close with the European commitments that are coming up. They're, you know, likely going through in the Champions League. So let's see how that goes. But I do think that they'll be able to keep it up. Yes, that Andre, he's asking what level of responsibility does Simone need to take for Aslani's development?
you can't make a player, unfortunately, be better if they're not good enough. Like, you can try to coach them up as much as possible, try to put them in situations where they may be able to be successful. But if the talent level isn't there, it doesn't really matter what the manager does. And you can encourage them as much as possible. They're still not going to be good enough, unfortunately. You know, sometimes it's just the quality's lacking. You know what I mean? So I just think that, I don't know. I don't put a lot of blame on him personally.
I don't know how you could. Like, at what level of importance of all the thing that Simone has to worry about is Aslani's development? Like, you know what I mean? Hakan's the starter, and, you know, he has this team playing the way that they've been playing for several seasons. Like, it's not...
Like, is
Aslani has to... He's gotten plenty of chances. He's had plenty of chances. It's not...
Like, B-Sec's gotten better, right? Are we going to say that was all Inzaghi, or does B-Sec have natural ability himself? You know, like, we have to kind of take these things into account. You just have to be able to step up when you're given the opportunities, plain and simple.
Yeah. Totonio, do you guys think Inter can sell Taremi in the summer, or will he end up like Arnautovic, rotting on the bench?
Man, he's a frustrating player right now, isn't he? I mean...
Yeah, I thought he was awesome against
Venezia,
but it doesn't seem like...
I thought he was going to be incredible for us. I thought he was going to be a massive upgrade on the likes of Arnautovic.
Me too.
And it makes me regret greatly that we didn't keep Edin Dzeko for at least another year. Maybe he wouldn't have been able to keep up this season. But it's like, that man deserved the Scudetto more than Arnautovic, and it's kind of disappointing. And I think in a perfect world, which I know is not possible, like, we would be able to go shopping for another center back and a striker in this window, but obviously that's not feasible. So I don't think we'll be able to sell him. I think it would be the kind of thing where we have to pay him to leave, which I know we're not going to do. We're not in the business of just giving guys away for free or we're taking losses on players. And I think we're just going to have to suffer it out with him. But he's been a massive disappointment.
Yeah. Intertwine had a comment about that as well, just that he was brought in to be a legit scoring threat and really disappointed with his finishing this season. Yeah, they're not going to be able to sell him, but he'll be on the bench, and then hopefully, you know, if we're able to make investments in the forwards, we can maybe someone will come in for a loan or something, but I highly doubt it. Peter Jordan asked about the no penalty on Thuram. What was your read of that?
To me, that was a penalty.
It didn't look like he got to the ball.
I didn't see him touch the ball on any angle that they showed. Now, if they actually showed me an actual angle where, you know, he does make contact at first with the ball and then gets Thuram, then I would be like, okay, I understand it. They didn't even go to VAR, right?
No.
So, I don't know. To me, kind of crazy.
Yeah, I don't know, because, you know, they've made this effort to not give away Rigorini, and, you know, Skorupsi was obviously trying to go for the ball. It just didn't look like he got any of it. I think it could have been a penalty, but I also, at that point in the game, wasn't really up in arms over it in the moment, because I thought that we were, you know, we were going to be able to score a couple more on them. At least that's what it looked like.
And so, can we, kind of piggybacking off this question, though, can we just talk about Luca Pairetto being one of the worst referees in Serie A?
Mourinho told us a long time ago.
I mean, horrendous. Horrendous refereeing decisions all game, both sides. I'm not just going to say, you know, that Inter were totally screwed. I mean, I thought we were. But my gosh, is he an awful, awful referee. And he would call plays back that shouldn't have been called back. He would, you know, not call fouls when there were clear fouls. I don't get him. I don't get him one bit.
Yeah. All right, let's do one more, and then let's talk about the state of this team. All right, so M6 Adam asked, do you guys think our summer transfer window was a waste? Wasted $20 million on a backup keeper and Palacios instead of signing a proper backup. I don't understand what that means. Which
I think it means a proper center back backup, maybe?
Maybe. He goes awful year by the management, which I do not agree with, but we'll talk about it. What do you think at this point of the season? Would you call the summer transfer window a waste?
For me, no. You know, I think you expected the guys that you brought in a free to be able to be impact players. Zielinski to me has been good. I don't know how you feel about him. I've been a fan of his play. He had the hockey assist leading up to the Lautaro goal. So I mean, I think he's played very well. He had two goals against Juve. Yeah, both penalties, but still big. Especially your first real start for the club to come up big in that and hit two. That's, I don't know, impressive to me. And I think that he's been a solid player. I mean, yeah, you could say he's had some mistakes as a regista. That's not his natural position, but I'm not too upset with it. You know, I could understand the frustration with bringing in Joseph Martinez, right? But how quickly we forget that we didn't have someone in when Handanovic was fading. We didn't have anybody prepared to take over the mantle. You know, we made some mistakes. You know, Padelli cost us some games when he was the backup. Radu, of course, you know, congrats. I'm sure someone's going to bring up the fact that I thought that he was going to be a fantastic player for us, and I was wrong, but Radu was not the guy, and it wasn't until Onana came in that we finally felt, you know, relief. And I think management took the right course with this situation. You know, you prepared for the future now. You bring in a guy that, listen, even though summer's been fantastic, who's to say he doesn't... Like, Handanovic was having a good year when he got that injury to his hand, and then Padelli had to step in for us. Injuries can happen, guys. Like, would you rather be the situation where we have I'm trying to think of a terrible backup, but I don't know. Let's say a guy like Montipo from Hellas is your backup, and you're giving up like some really weak goals and he's allowing own goals and stuff, and by I mean allowing own goals, putting the ball in himself, and then we're dropping points left, right, and center. Or would you rather have a competent backup who then when Sommer retires or decides to move on is able to step in and become the everyday starter? I think we all would agree that that would be the better case. And Palacios is an investment for the future. You know, I mean, do I wish they would have planned for Acerbi obviously hitting a wall? Like, Father Time is undefeated. We hear that all the time, right? And he is quickly fading. We hear the reports now that his career may be done potentially. Like, I mean, I don't know if it was just, you know,
his Inter career is likely over.
Like that I mean, I feel for the guy. You know, he's beat cancer. He's been through a lot in his life, and I'm sure when you go through all that chemotherapy, right, it takes a lot out of you, and I'm sure it takes a little bit longer to recover from things, and you're not as, and he's what, 36, 37 now. It's, you know, do I wish we had someone there? Of course. I don't see why Palacios isn't able to step in and play a few games, though. That's a little frustrating that we don't have that. But I don't think it was money wasted. And who were you going to get? Seriously. Martinez was 15. 7 million for Palacios. So let's say 23. What good center back are you going to get for 23 million euros to either step in as a starter or step in as a backup? Realistically.
I don't think you can even, like, I don't think you can say a wasted summer by management when these guys, their Inter careers haven't even kicked off. Like, what if Palacios is, you know, playing in this team for the next 10 years and Martinez is in this team for the next 7? Like,
I was going to say, just what if Martinez wins, like, best goalkeeper in Serie A, and then we go on to win 8 straight Scudettos with him as our starting goalkeeper?
You know what it is, Johnny? It's just, and this is, it's kind of dovetailing into what I really want to talk about, where it's
then let's get into it. Let's go.
It's very, yeah. If Inter drops points at any point during the season, you see the same narratives come up. Management sucks. What's Inzaghi doing? This player sucks. Like, all this stuff. Without any context, it's so reactionary to game after game. And it's very, I just think it's like low level supporter stuff. Like, I understand criticism after a game, and a game like that was something that you can be critical of. I thought we completely lost control of the game, you know, later on. And there are some things that I think need to be taken into context. So really where I would like to start is this drama that occurs year after year whenever Inter are face any sort of adversity, which of all the seasons in football history to be facing adversity, I think the one where you're playing more games than any other season in history, it's to be expected that at some point the players are going to slow down a little bit and things are going to, you know, the minutes are going to start taking a toll. Not to mention this Fratesi situation, which I'm over at this point. Like, I could not care less. If he whatever his agent is saying, or if this is all on him that he really wants out right now, it's like, it's kind of like, fuck you. Like, you know, have a nice time in Rome, not competing for trophies for whenever. But it's always crisis Inter. There's a crisis at Inter. And I really wanted to take a look at the context around the seasons that the top European contenders, so the teams that are fighting for their domestic cup in the top five leagues, and the teams that are considered to make a push for the Champions League. I wanted to look at the seasons that everyone is having. So let's start talking about crisis. So the first thing is that all the contenders that you see here on the list, so I have Liverpool, Atletico Madrid, Barca, Arsenal, Inter, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Leverkusen, Atalanta, PSG, Milan, Manchester City, Dortmund, and Juventus. I threw Napoli in here because I'm going to get to them in a little bit.
But you also threw Juventus in there. Why?
But I threw Juventus in there because they're just a rival of us, and I just wanted to show just something to compare. You'll see.
But why? I'm already disgusted. Because
I'm going to get to it.
Get to it, because I'm mad.
All right. So what you're looking at here is these are the teams that not only are they meant to be contending for real trophies, they're also the teams that have played more games than any other team in Europe, any other teams in Europe, right? So let's sort this sheet here. The only teams that have played more than Inter, and this actually needs to be updated because we've played 29 games. When I pulled this, it was still at 28. But we've played the same amount of games as a Real Madrid, a Barcelona, and the Atletico, a Manchester City, and a Liverpool, and so forth. And let's just look at like what that looks like for all these top contending teams. The only teams in Europe that have won more games than Inter this year are Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, and Liverpool. Three of the best clubs in Europe, but we're two wins behind Barca and Atletico Madrid, and Liverpool have been dominating and running away with the league. But I would say 19 wins compared to the rest of the contenders in Europe, more than, you know, PSG, Leverkusen, right there with Bayern Munich, more than Manchester City. The club is still operating at an elite level. All right, let's take a look at the losses. The only teams that have lost less than Inter this year are Liverpool with 2, and I don't think anyone is really challenging Liverpool in the Premier League. Leverkusen with 2, and I don't know that the Bundesliga is I don't think it's stronger than Serie A, number one, but I think there's a lot of pretty bad teams in the Bundesliga right now. And Juventus. Juventus has lost less games than Inter, but they've drawn 15 matches. Okay? And Inter has drawn 6. We've won 8 more games than Juventus. So I'll take the 1 more loss than them to have the 8 more wins as well. All right? Points per match. The only teams averaging higher
are Leverkusen, Bayern Munich, Atletico Madrid, and Liverpool. Goals against among the top European teams. I'm leaving out Napoli for this specific reason, but we'll get to them in a second. No team has given up less goals than Inter this year. Of these top European contenders, 21. 21, okay? Real Madrid has given up goals against 35. Manchester City has given up 42 goals. Barcelona has given up 32 goals, okay? And Inter is sitting at 21. All right? Goal differential, plus 40. The only teams with a better goal differential of the contending teams in Europe are Liverpool, Bayern, and Barcelona. And you can regularly see Bayern Munich hit teams 6-5 nothing in the Bundesliga. You don't see that very often in Serie A, although Inter is one of the teams that has done that. All right, let's take a look at clean sheets. No team has more clean sheets than Inter. 17. The closest to them are Liverpool, Atletico, and Napoli with 14. Three more clean sheets than all the other top European contenders. Okay? Highest clean sheet percentage as well. Oh, second highest compared to Napoli, but we'll get to them in a second. Second highest clean sheet percentage. Playing across four competitions. Our players are traveling to the international break, playing more minutes than just about everybody. All right, this didn't account for the minutes that we put in yesterday, but we would be up here with Atletico, Atalanta, Real, and Barcelona. The only teams that would have played more minutes are Liverpool, Manchester City, and Arsenal, and they're accounting for the Carabao Cup, which their real teams aren't really playing, and the English Community Shield as well. This team is playing more football than we've ever seen in European competition before. And they're having a pretty damn good season. They're having a pretty damn good season. A 2-2 draw to Bologna is going to happen over the course of a season. You're going to hit adversity over the course of a season. It's not realistic to expect your team, like Johnny said, that you're going to go 38-0-0 and that you're not going to lose any of these games. Now, this is your first time, Johnny, seeing this table. Like, in comparison, I would say we're having an elite season with a couple blips along the way that are to be expected.
I mean, you did a lot of work on this. I feel like you quit your job and started doing this right away.
I just pulled the table. That's all. I just pulled the table.
Where'd you find this then, that you pulled this table?
Stathead. Stathead. I subscribe to Stathead.
Okay. Did not know that. But all right. Yeah, no. When you break it down this way, it's obviously very, very interesting to see where we stack up against the rest of Europe. Some of these teams I don't take seriously. Some of these teams' competitions I don't take seriously. So yeah, this is performing at an elite level. And I think when you also factor in the fact of investments, some of these teams, and when I say some, I mean all of these teams, have spent significantly more than we have. You can look at what Liverpool spent. Atletico was able to bring in a guy. I mean, I don't know about you, but if we were able to go and sign Julian Alvarez, I'm sure we would be in a better situation right now.
Instead of Taremi on a free. We have to do deals like Taremi on a free.
You know, Barcelona is able to sign players, not register them forever, and then they get leniency because Real Madrid sign off on it because they want the league to be competitive still. When in reality, they should be punished for being so in debt. When's the last time Inter spent $70 million in a January transfer window? Exactly. PSG was able to go do that just now by stealing a player from Napoli. I don't know. I honestly, I don't think Real Madrid did anything too crazy. Oh, wait. They signed Kylian Mbappe. Haha. Like, come on. I think the only ones that really didn't do anything too nuts, to be quite honest, looking at this list and not really diving into every single one specifically, would probably be Dortmund. I think everybody else has spent a good amount of money. I think Dortmund, they do a lot of lower level sign. They still sign players, don't get me wrong, but nothing that's like, oh my gosh, it's going to elevate us to X level, you know, whatever. Even Napoli were able to bring in Buongiorno, you know, like that's more than we spent all summer. And they did it on a stud center back, which I also think that if we had him in the middle of our three-man defense, we probably would have more clean sheets and even way less goals conceded. So, listen, I know I get heated with the team. I get very disgusted. I could go off on Twitter, which I probably need to reel in. But when you actually sit back and look at it from a 30, like whatever, a 30,000 foot view, and you see it and you compare it to everything else, I would be more understanding that you're frustrated with the lack of spending, because that's what's really annoying. But in terms of compete level and being able to be competitive in all competitions that we're involved in, we're right there, if not better, like you showed. So we're spoiled.
You talk about spoiled. Like, looking at the table, only three teams have been able to celebrate as many wins as Inter this season. And it's Barcelona, like we talked about, but they also have three more losses than we do. It's Atletico Madrid. They've had a fantastic season. I can't take anything away from them. I think Diego Simeone is a great coach. And they spent, you know, a good amount of money this summer bringing in Sorloth, bringing in Julian Alvarez, and so forth. And Liverpool has five more wins than us, but they also played three more games as well.
And I also remember the days where we were actually rumored to be in on Sorloth. Like, and look at that. Everyone's like, oh, I don't think he's not good enough. He's not good enough for Serie A. He's not good enough for... And now he's doing well for Atletico. Not Julian Alvarez level well, but well enough. Like,
so we've celebrated wins, a majority of wins, more than most of the European contenders. And also, we've only had to see... It's bad that our losses have come against... The only other teams that have lost less than us are Liverpool, Leverkusen, and Juventus, which Leverkusen, we took that side to the deep end, away from home, up until the 90th minute, playing a mostly rotated side. Okay? Liverpool having a great season. Juventus, obviously, they've seen 15 ties so far. And then for Inter, we had two derby losses, and I would argue one of those derby losses, we should have won that game, and we just, you know, we got away from it. The first game was bad, that was poor, and the Leverkusen loss, like I just said, you took them to the 90th minute with a rotated side away from home in Europe. Like, if we come up against Leverkusen again, I don't think that we're going to lose that game. Knock on wood. So, I know in the moment we can talk about like crisis, or we can feel like a crisis, because we lost the Supercoppa final, which was a derby. You know, we come out against Venezia and it's only a 1-0 win. You know, it's a 2-2 draw against Bologna. All the Fratesi drama is going on, and you start to see this stuff come up on Inter Twitter of like, as if we're suffering this season, and we're not suffering at all. We're not suffering at all. And all of this is occurring with some pretty major injuries that we've had to go through. On top of some of our players like going long spells without performing. Like Lautaro, for example. Basically having one functioning striker for most of the season. And we've won 19 games. Let me share this sheet again, because I do want to talk about Napoli for a second.
No, this isn't a Napoli podcast.
It's not a Napoli podcast, but we do have to have this conversation, because I've seen this come up a lot. This sense of Inter has the obligation to win the Scudetto. Inter has the obligation to win the Scudetto. All right, let's look over here. Napoli are competing. We're competing this season in two competitions. They're already knocked out of one. So they're only competing in one competition with Antonio Conte versus Inter, who is going to play, you know, maybe twice the amount of games that Napoli is going to play. I posted this tweet until the let's see, is this the right one? Okay, until the next Inter Napoli game, Inter had 10 fixtures. Okay, Bologna already passed, but Empoli, Monaco, Lazio, Fiorentina, and Genoa at home, and Sparta, Lecce, Milan, and Juventus away. Napoli only has 6 games until we meet them again. Juventus and Udinese, and then Atalanta, Roma, Lazio, and Como. So they have 4 less games than us before we, you know, before we meet again. So I'm not really understanding this, like, Inter has the obligation. I think Napoli has the obligation. They're not competing for anything else. This is the only competition they're competing for. One team plays once a week and the other team plays every 3 days.
Tell them.
And Inter's got the obligation. We have every reason to not win this title. And we're still right there. What reasons does Napoli have to not win this title? And don't tell me, oh, Cavada's gone now. Conte has been transitioning that team away from Cavada for a while now. If anything, I think they might look even better. They
tell
might look
them.
Even better without him. They spent money this summer. Imagine telling Antonio Conte it's not his obligation to win the league when he's going up against the other 2 competitors for the title, Atalanta and Inter, are playing a game every 3 days. You tell Conte that it's not his obligation to win the league with only playing once every 7 days and see what he tells you. He would give you a different story. That's not what he's telling his players. I can guarantee you that's not what he's telling his players. He is expecting to win the Serie A this year. He's expecting to win the Serie A this year. And you know what? This is his best fucking chance. Because wait till they qualify for Europe next year. And then let's see Conte playing every 3 days. And let's see how that works out. Am I wrong? Am I wrong for this?
You Twitter guys got him fired up, man. Y'all pissed Alessandro. I've never seen Alessandro this angry. What'd y'all do? But nothing you said is wrong.
You've been seeing it, right? You've been seeing it, right? It's Inter's title to lose. It's Inter's title to throw away. Is that a joke? One of the contenders in the race only has one fucking competition to play. If they don't win, it's an embarrassment. It's an absolute embarrassment. If Antonio Conte doesn't win the league playing once a week.
Second, man, y'all got him heated. Listen, I agree with everything Alessandro just said. I don't think Napoli are real contenders because I think that their roster is a joke. I don't think Lukaku's serious. I wouldn't rely on him to come good when you need him most. I know Buongiorno's hurt and he's coming back. Now, I do think, yes, they have it easier. And I'm not like, you know, certain people who think, oh, you know, one competition a week, Conte is unbeatable in the league. I don't care what his attitude is or what antics he's doing on the sideline. If your lineup isn't good enough and you don't play up to snuff, it doesn't matter. But I do think they have a lot less pressure on themselves, which in fact makes it, because of the lack of competition that they're participating in, which should make it, yes, easier for them to win the title. So I don't think it's Inter's title to lose. I think we're the defending champions and that we are expected to win again, given the lineup we had. And I can understand that. But Serie A is unbelievably deep from top to bottom. Serie A is not a cakewalk. You know, this isn't the Bundesliga or Ligue 1. You know, if we were in the French league, it is our title to lose, 100%.
Johnny, I just really quick want to jump in because you make a great point about Serie A as the competition versus, a Ligue 1 or a Bundesliga. Like, these teams that you play, Venezia, Verona, Genoa, whatever, they will play so fucking hard against you. And they will set up shop, whatever the term is.
I'm not even trolling. You put Venezia in Ligue 1, I'd say 10th, 9th place, easily. You put them in Bundesliga, there's only 18 teams in that league. So let's say, I don't know, 12, 13, you know, like, I just don't get, I don't get what people are upset about or people are worried about with that. You know, like, our competition is much more difficult than what those clubs are going through. That graph that Alessandro shows, cool, Leverkusen's, you know, got as many wins as we do in that amount of time. All right, but let's look at who they're playing. You know, Hoffenheim, I mean, their captain and just went off yesterday. He's so fed up with the way things are going with that club. Like, let's just look at these things from a 30,000-foot view and take everything into account before we have these breakdowns.
I think Inter are the most talented team and the best team in Serie A. But Serie A is not the competition where the most talented team is going to win. Like, these things matter. Like, playing multiple competitions a week and managing that with a transfer budget of zero and having to, you know, having to rotate every 3 days, it's Inzaghi's job is much more difficult than what Conte has ahead of him. I believe that we're going to win the league. I believe that we're going to win the league. But I also see a lot on Twitter that's kind of like letting Napoli off the hook. Like, don't let them off the hook. They play once a week. They play once a week and they have a damn good team. Okay? Look at, and we talk about the drama around Inter, and Fabrizio Biasin tweeted this. Since the loss in the derby, this is excluding the Supercoppa Italiana, right? Just looking at Serie A. Since the loss in the derby, beat Udinese, beat Torino, beat Roma, tied Juve, beat Empoli, beat Venezia, tied Napoli, beat Verona, beat Parma, beat Lazio, beat Como, beat Cagliari, beat Venezia, tied Bologna. That's a tough fixture list that they've managed with rotating game in and game out. Other games around this. This team is like it. They're doing fantastic. They're managing an incredibly difficult situation, and we as Inter fans can't do this after every result that we don't like, every result that doesn't go our way, where it's we create this drama. You see on Calcio Twitter, like Milan and Juve, like they like pick each other up. Those fan bases like pick each other up for the drama.
I mean, but true no lovers.
Fan base, true lovers. But do you see a fan base that attacks every aspect of their club the way that Interisti do? After a draw, no less, they attack the players, the coach, the management, the ownership. And it's not that any part of the club is exempt from criticism. But some of the stuff that I see is it's beyond just criticism. It's over the top. It's not like you're not being real. Like you're not being real. These players are not robots. They're playing more than any other players have played in the history of this game. In the history of this game. Barella was spectacular in the first half against Bologna. You know what I saw in the second half? He's fucking exhausted. Exhausted. Playing every game. Every single game. 90 minutes every 3 days. You're laughing at me because I don't get upset, but I'm Inter's like Inter Twitter has upset me. They've upset me.
I'm never the calm one. This is nice. I like this.
I've just been seeing way too much bullshit. You want to get into more bullshit, Johnny? Let me get into more bullshit.
Oh, okay? Man. What did you guys do?
I've seen way too much bullshit. All right, this guy, Gautam Sharma, who's an Inter fan, he has a pretty big following. He tweeted this, which bothered the shit out of me. All right, so Inter's transfers since Oaktree took over. Thomas Perez, Joseph Martinez, Luka Topalovic, Palacios, and Alex Perez. He says it's too early to confirm this.
Sorry, but Thomas Perez isn't even done.
It's not even done yet. It's not even done. He says, it's too early to confirm this rather scary trend, but I have a bad feeling that the great Marotta deal days are past us now. No more high-quality, high-wage players. His hands may be tied. So far, Oaktree transfers have a very banter era-ish feel. I just hope these transfers are more towards building an Inter B for the lower division next summer rather than a trend for things to come for Inter. Okay. Let's break this down. Let's break this down one by one. So as far as these signings that were made, if you look at Inter's team, and the budget that we have, right? Oaktree looks at Inter like an asset. They're not fans the way that we are. They look at Inter like an asset, and they're not going to buy older players or do. Remember, the Taremi and Zielinski deals were done before they came in. They were already there, but it was before they took real control, before Zhang left. Okay. They may have made investments for other players instead of Zielinski and Taremi. It may have been, you know, Peter Sucic and another forward, whoever they've been linked to recently. But the old regime wanted those guys, so they went for it. The Marotta deal type players. I don't know what you guys want. You're bitching that we don't see Berenbrook and we don't see the youngsters in the team. People want to see Alexiu. People want to see, every which player from the fucking Primavera. But now that we're actually investing in players that could be pretty good, Tomas Perez, he looks like he could be pretty good. Topalovic looks like he can be pretty good. Palacios for the future. Right? All of this, you don't want that to happen, even though you cry for it every weekend. Why aren't we playing the Primavera players? You're scared that the Marotta deal players are going to go by the wayside. Taremi and Zielinski came in. They haven't done anything. And now they're ours. We're not going to be able to get rid of them. The Marotta deal stuff has been patchwork kind of stuff. And that shit is super hit or miss. Oaktree will do a Turam deal in the future. Oaktree will do that deal. A younger player for free that they can recoup the money on, they'll do that deal. That can have an $85 million release clause, they'll do that deal. We shouldn't be doing the Zielinski and Taremi deals anymore. We shouldn't be signing contracts for players that are 30 years and older anymore. We want that to go by the wayside. Banter era-ish feel. You know what a banter era signing was? Jonathan. That's a banter era signing. Not Tomas Palacios. I just don't know what you guys want. You can't do anything right. You want to see young players every weekend, but you don't want to sign young players. You can't sell your Arnautovic's and your older players for shit, but you're scared that you're not going to get any more Taremi and Zielinski deals. What the fuck is this bipolar shit? It's just complaining just to complain at this point. What do you want this club to be? Give me Palacios and Tomas Perez and Peter Sucic and Josep Martinez. I want those players. I do. Fuck. I've had.
You good?
Yeah. Sorry.
All right. Yeah. No, it is a frustrating thing for sure. Like, I mean, when I see stuff like that, wanting young players and then complaining about signing young players, it doesn't make any sense. Like, it really doesn't. It's insane to see some of these takes. And I wonder what the thought process is when you put something like Taider, Gargano, Campagnaro, Kuzmanovic. Where on that list are those guys similar or even remotely close to how poor those players were? Ishak Belfodil.
The name that was just on my mind. That's a banter era signing.
That's a banter era signing. None of these young players are the same. Now, if you want to come out and tell me, Tomas Perez gives me Ruben Bota vibes, in the sense that we're hyping him up and he turns out to be nothing, that could be possible. It could be. Do I see it? Probably not. You know, I think that in this day and age, there's a lot more of a scouting network than probably back then. A lot more probably going into investing in that aspect of, of team building. Obviously, they're two different profiles. One's more of a defensive mid. Bota was kind of like a winger or attacking mid. It's not the same thing. You know, Sucic, I mean, nobody loves Croatians at Inter more than me. Nobody. Nobody wants to see Croatians at Inter more than me. You know, like, I don't know. that a signing like Peter Sucic is awesome. I don't know why people are so, I don't know, like hung up, like it's going to be.
They cry for Francesco Pio Esposito to get minutes in the team next year.
Yeah.
But they're working towards signing a Peter Sucic or Palacios, like young guys, and now we're making the wrong investment. I don't understand what it is that you guys want from the club. Why is investing in young players a bad idea? Man City spent 50 million on a 20-year-old, Kusanov.
I mean, he's not worth 50 million, but yes, I get what you're saying. I mean, I've wanted this to be the way Inter go for a couple of years now. I've said in the model of like a Dortmund, not in the sense where I want to be sellers all the time, but you buy young, you develop players, and you allow them to grow in your club and become massive successes. Who's to say that Perez, Palacios, Martinez, Sucic, you know, maybe, I mean, Topalovic would be incredible to see too. You know, like, there's loads of potential there. Loads. These aren't banter era signings. I'm sorry. Like,
Inter is the average age. They're the oldest squad in Serie A. They're the oldest squad in Serie A. The average age is 30 every time they step on the fucking pitch. Okay, guys? No, dude, Oaktree is not stepping in and saying no if Inter want to sign, if a Marcus Thuram becomes available and they want to sign him.
I would like that to be around 25, 26 for average age.
That's fine with me.
Like, that's where I think you could be, one, successful, two, handle the fixture list that we have nowadays. Like, 30-year-olds can't be doing 2-3 games a week, every week. It's just not sustainable.
You can't sell them. You can't sell them. And also, nope. Guys, investing in, like, the 25, you got to understand, like, this isn't just an Inter problem. It's like a where world football is right now. Investing in the guys that are in their prime currently, like right smack dab in the middle of their prime, they're in-demand players and their market is going to be inflated. We're not doing that anymore. We're not doing that anymore. For better or for worse. Honestly, seeing Man City have a tough first half of the season and then spending $150 million in January, it's sickening. It's sickening. We're not playing in that pool. We have to play in the Palacios and the Thomas Perez pool. The club was built off of getting talented youngsters from, you know, South America to come into the team and grow and develop. Like, that's what Internazionale is. That's what we are. I'm good with a 21-year-old Peter Sucic. Have you guys watched him? He's incredible. That's real potential. That's real potential right there. I believe in Palacios. I know we haven't seen a lot of him, but every time we've seen him, he's looked pretty damn good. Pretty damn good. You just, like, gotta understand where we're at. Where Inter's at, where Italian football is at. And with everything that we have to deal with and the way that we have to play on the transfer market, I just showed you the graph. We are an elite team. An elite, elite team. Every club has the mistakes. Every club has an Aslani who's just not good enough. That's going to happen.
I don't know if every club has an Aslani. That'd be...
Juve has Douglas Luiz.
Milan's got
I'll take him.
Pavlovic that they invested 20 million in this summer that now it looks like he's going to Fenerbahce. It's like this is like it's not going to be perfect. Not every aspect is going to be perfect, which is okay to criticize, but what's happened over the last several days on Inter Twitter, it's been too much for me. The crisis at Inter thing is too much for me.
I think you need to be on Twitter more often than me now. I like this. I like when you get angry.
I'm pissed. I'm pissed.
No, I'm loving this. I'm loving this.
I think it's fans are fans, right? But
yo, pull up. I thought you had more receipts.
Those are my receipts. Those are my ones.
That was it.
That was it. No shame.
That's disappointing.
I know Sean wanted.
You hyped it up. I'm sorry, fans. I'm sorry, listeners. He made me think we had like five, six people that we were going after, and that was it.
You know, maybe I used receipts wrong. I am an old.
I'm a little disappointed. When I got receipts, I got multiples. When I went after Julian, I got multiples.
We can pull up receipts. Who do we want to go after? Pick a name.
No, I don't want. Now it's too late. The moment's lost.
But. Yeah,
But if you're gonna come in here threatening, you know, receipts, all I'm saying is you better have, you know, multiples.
My receipts was a chart showing that Inter's been one of the best teams in Europe.
That's not receipts. That's evidence.
All right, maybe
you had evidence to build your case.
That's evidence to build my case. That's what I.
This just shows that Alessandro one doesn't watch enough Suits or Law and Order, and two. That he wasn't really as worked up as I thought he was.
I'm pretty worked up.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is the problem with modern day social media. If you're gonna get mad, you better have multiple reasons to be mad.
I'm mad.
But all kidding aside, like, I don't know. There's a lot of things that, you know, like, upset me with Inter Twitter. A lot of things that I kind of haven't had to, like, I've just been staying quiet on just because I don't want to get into it too much. I do think we're a very reactionary fan base, myself included. You know, I can get heated over performances and you know, think the world is burning, the sky is falling, whatever you want to call it. But it really isn't as bad as we make it out to be as fans. Like, we need... I used to love having Twitter spaces and being able to talk, and I felt like a lot of people would just complain about the same things every time we did a space. That's why, like, I decided to just start a podcast with you. Like, I got tired of hearing the same complaints over and over again, same things that we were whining about.
Yeah, Beppe's blind. A certain player gets singled out every single time.
And then it just turns into a screaming match. You know, like, this, you know, like, the louder I get, you know, it's just, I don't know. It wasn't.
But I don't get why, like, Juve can draw 15 matches and you'll see them bitch about the team, but then everything is like fino alla fine. Like, they're like the most positive, you know, at least the majority of
them. Who are you following? Who are you following? Like,
I'm not following Juventini, but it's what comes up on my algorithm. I see a lot of, you know, what I see from Calcio Twitter is that Interisti savage Inter incredibly, incredibly hard. After results that are like, your team is going to face adversity at some point throughout the season. And that doesn't mean that the sky is falling all the time. Even with the Fratesi situation, like, ultimately, guys, we're talking about a backup player who you can replace with a better player. I don't think anybody. On the team. Is anybody on the team worried about losing Fratesi? Like, I'm talking about, like, is Barella or Bastoni looking at Fratesi like, our season's over if this guy gets out of here?
Hell no! Hell no!
No way!
Barella's like, this is the worst understudy I could have asked for. This guy sucks. Only reason he's here is because he's got a hot sister.
Chiara sealed the deal. Maybe she's the one pushing for the transfer.
Big old Pinocchio nose of his. Ugly, Fratesi, you're ugly, dude. Anyway, Man, I've got the worst allergies right now. Anyway.
All right. I got off my chest what I want to get off my chest.
Good.
Tired.
I don't think there's really anything I want to say about the game. I think that kind of was like, I think you needed that little vent sesh. I'm happy you had it. Happy you got it out there.
Thanks for letting me get it out. Appreciate that.
We all need it every now and then.
Appreciate that. Am I wrong? Was I wrong?
No, I agreed with everything you said. I'm glad I didn't see that tweet. I probably would have been pissed off. I probably would have quote tweeted it with something not so nice. So it's good.
All right, let's end with this. Let's end with this.
Let's hear it.
Now that you've heard me bitch, you've heard me bitch about everyone bitching. This period of the season where, you know, we're going through a few injuries. We've had some results that are not devastating. We haven't gotten, you know, blown off the pitch. It can happen. Any change to your expectation around what Inter should do for the rest of the season? We're officially halfway point is here.
No change. Scudetto first, Club World Cup second, Champions League third. And I only say Club World Cup second because I still want us all to go to Seattle. Which, hey, if you listen to this podcast and you live in the United States and you are not in our DMs trying to plan out the Seattle matches with us, I don't want to sit with you. Okay? You better hit me up, hit Alessandro up, hit the interviews pod DMs, something, if you want to sit. Get a section together. Try to get a bunch of fans together. Let's go to dinner, either before the game, after the game, whatever. But I'm saying Club World Cup because I just want to be there in the championship. That's all. Anyway, I think that's the priority. Honestly, I don't think that either of those are unachievable, unattainable, however you want to phrase it. I really think that we have the squad that can handle at bare minimum winning Scudetto and having a decent run in the Champions League and hopefully an equally decent run in the Club World Cup.
I'll ask you two more things. What is the thing about the rest of the season that worries you the most? And what's health. The thing that you're most high on? Yeah, I would say the same.
Health is the thing I'm most worried about. You could see that the guys who are in their 30s are getting dinged up. Missing time, that's not good for us. And the thing that, what was it say?
The thing that you're positive on, that you feel like you're, you know, can lead us to where we're trying to go.
And I think we have, you know, the right guys in key positions that can weather the storm and handle, you know, everything that comes at them. Barella, Bastoni, Di Marco. You know, we're starting to see signs of life from Lautaro. That's good. That's what we want to see.
Yeah. For me, it would also be health because, like, for example, Hakan. Like, we can't keep turning to the Aslani can sub in for a couple games, but now we're coming up against...
Not even a couple games. If we can address one thing, one freaking thing, it's either another Mezzala that would allow us, like, that we're comfortable with, like a Sucic that we could put Barella there when Hakan's not in, or you actually get a defensive midfielder. I know Samuelarici won't probably be moving in January unless we do sell Fratesi, which if that happens, please, just take whatever it is. If it's 45 million, you take that money and you throw it at Torino, because you know Cairo's going to give you a hard time. Like, you're going to have to overpay for Ricci in January. And I would say just get it done. Get it done. We have an opportunity to be competitive in multiple. Like, imagine if we could rest Hakan in the league for the most part, let Ricci start because we know he can handle Serie A, and then Hakan just has to focus on Champions League.
And you don't even know how talented Ricci actually is. Like, when good players play around other good players and you see what they really can do,
like
you don't know.
I don't think people watch Lazio games as much as I do. If Rovella was on this team, Rovella would probably have 5 or 6 more assists. I'm not even kidding. Yeah. He's a phenomenal distributor of the ball. The finishing at Lazio is horrendous, and that's what's been holding him back. But Imagine if Ricci was on this team being able to do the same types of things. I mean, I just think we are missing out. And I think Fratesi's not the answer. Aslani's not the answer. In a perfect world, 45 million, 20 million, you get 65 for the two of them. And you reinvest it, whether it and Ricci and Sucic would be my ideal ones right off the bat.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I, for me, like, again, health is the thing that we're going to be battling all season with all these minutes. But the thing that gives me the most amount of hope that we can actually pull this off is the leadership at the team. Whether it's Barella, Bastoni, Lautaro on the pitch, you know, making sure everyone's level is up there. Despite the fact that they have tired legs, I believe in those guys. I believe in Simone Inzaghi. He's shown what he can have this Inter team do when they're humming and when they're fresh. And then, you know, like the management who gets so much shit anytime. Not every deal is going to be great, but they get so much shit. Meanwhile, it's like the Sucic name came up today. You think that they just stumbled on Sucic? And you think that he's like the only name in case
I've been scouting for Inter for months. I've been sending the film.
That's what I'm saying. You think Marotta is 70 years old? He's just throwing shit at the wall. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. They're working on it. They're working on it. And that doesn't mean that you're going to hear about it. If anything,
listen. I'm doing more scouting for Inter than they are right now. Okay. Now that I work in football, I'm able to do the scouting. I send them my videos. I tell them who to go after.
Talk to Piero or Dario?
I talked to Dario. You know, he's more available and willing to talk. Piero, he said he would only, you know, he wants me to come out for dinner. That's a whole different thing. We'll sit down. We'll share a bottle of wine. We'll talk some players. You know, maybe we'll get some players loaned to the Las Vegas Lights. I don't know. I mean, it's possible. You know, we might see Topalovic here in the summer. I don't know.
Wait till Di Marzio starts tweeting the pictures of you guys at dinner.
I can't wait. Can't wait either. I'm ready for that. No, but like seriously, like these guys know what they're doing. They know who has potential. They know who can fit in. And the beauty of it is when you have a manager like Simone Inzaghi who allows his management team to have free reign, because he may tell them specific profiles that he wants, you know, or characteristics that he's looking for in a player. He's not saying, hey, I want player X, go buy player X. No, they do communicate, and this is what they're looking for, and these are the players that they're finding, whether it's Perez, whether it's, you know, Sucic, whether it's whomever, you know. They know what they're doing. We may have players that we want. I know myself, there's players that I would love to see at Inter. That doesn't mean that they would actually fit in. It doesn't mean that, you know, that they would be successes at Inter. So let's let them work. Let's let them, you know, we have like 14 more days. Hopefully, you know, we can get Roma to up their offer, get Fratesi out, and go find, you know, a legitimate replacement.
Yeah, I'm good on him. I'm all set with it. All right. Thanks for listening, guys. I had a lot to get off my chest, but I appreciate you letting me do that. In the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi, forza ragazzi.